In my family, education means cultivating wisdom and virtue by teaching what is good, true, and beautiful. Memoria Press makes this type of education possible with their classical Christian curriculum. Characterized by simplicity, quality, and affordability, Memoria Press gives my children a rich classical education. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
I finally just said, Lord, you know, this is not on my bucket list, but if it's really something you want me to do.
If a county clerk can go to jail without bail for this, who's next? You know who's next? You are. And every other pastor in every other pulpit who believes the Bible is the infallible, inerrant word of God and refuses to compromise.
The Bible's very clear about the responsibility to help the poor. I mean, it's mentioned hundreds of times in the Bible. I don't think I see anywhere in the Bible where it says that the government's supposed to do that.
I think we need more prayer in public life, not less.
A big country ought to be able to sort these things out where people's conscience is protected just as people's sexual orientation is protected. And that's what's not happening right now.
That is a very real possibility, the IRS targeting those who follow a biblical teaching of marriage.
Well, those voices of Ben Carson, Mike Huckabee, Ted Cruz, Jeb Bush, Carly Fiorina, and Rick Santorum speaking yesterday at a Freedom Forum in Dallas, Texas. Now, this is a group of about 6,000 evangelical leaders gathered there in Plano at a Presbyterian church, a megachurch there, and the presidential candidates, most of them, are down there speaking. What draws the Republican presidential candidates to evangelical voters and vice versa? Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in on this Monday afternoon, the 19th of October. We're going to talk about evangelical voters and the GOP presidential race. Mark Hemingway will join us, senior writer for the Weekly Standard. A little bit later in this hour, Pastor Tom Baker joins us. We'll be teaching a Sunday school lesson on the Passover. That's in Exodus chapters 11 and 12. And Tom is host of a radio show called Law and Gospel that's coming up here in about 15 minutes on Issues Etc. Mark Hemingway is a regular guest. He's senior writer for the Weekly Standard. He joins us to talk about evangelical voters and the GOP presidential race. Mark, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Hey, it's always good to be back.
The Freedom Coalition sponsored a gathering of evangelical religious conservatives at Prestonwood Baptist Church near Dallas, Texas, and they also managed to attract several of the GOP presidential hopefuls there. What brought those presidential candidates or hopeful candidates down there to Dallas?
Well, obviously, evangelical voters are a big component of the GOP base. I mean, it's not to say that it would be impossible to win without, you know, winning a majority of evangelical votes, but it sure is hard to do so. So, I mean, it's just, you know, a function of simple, you know, vote counting on one level. And on another level, I mean, I think a lot of issues that are of concern for evangelicals right at this moment in terms of religious freedom and life issues also resonate beyond evangelical voters within a broader coalition of socially conservative Republicans.
So as far as I could tell, Ted Cruz was there, Carly Fiorina, Rick Santorum, Mike Huckabee, Ben Carson, and Jeb Bush. Which of these candidates is doing the best currently, in your opinion, at kind of striking all the right notes with evangelicals?
Well, the two that really stand out, the two that really stand out are Ted Cruz and Ben Carson. Now, it's interesting because from much of what I know about this event, I read in the Washington Post, and the Washington Post barely touches on Ben Carson, his role at this event. But there's no question, looking at polls, looking at what's going on in Iowa and other things like that, the reason why Ben Carson is the number two guy in the race is that for whatever reason, he has very much attracted evangelical voters. He's probably the most openly religious of the GOP candidates. He probably talks about his faith more than any of them, with the possible exception of Mike Huckabee. I'll count him as the half later. But he really hits a lot on the Bible. He hits a lot on his own beliefs as a Seventh-day Adventist. And he's so sincerely religious, I think that's resonating with evangelical voters. The other guy, obviously, is Ted Cruz. And I don't really know what to say about that. I don't know much about Ted Cruz's personal faith story, other than he very much, you know, he's from Texas himself. He's very familiar with mega churches in that world. He's a very good campaigner. He speaks very eloquently on the religious freedom issue because you know he's got quite the history as a legal expert, clerking for Supreme Court Justice William Rehnquist, you know, being Texas Solicitor General. So he really understands the issues involved in religious freedom, and he really seems to take that issue as a serious threat in a way that I think that is resonating with evangelical voters. And then finally, I said 2.5. I'm throwing Mike Huckabee in there simply because, well, he's a former Baptist minister, and he really knows how to reach this crowd. It's just that he's showing in the polls, and, you know, we've kind of been around the bend with him a few times at this point in time. It isn't very high, so I don't think he's going to rate very high among evangelical voters or, you know, the GOP voters in general, but he certainly knows how to speak to that audience.
One of the candidates that wasn't there was Donald Trump, and early on he was apparently, I don't know how to read this, but apparently polling well with what the news was calling Republican-leaning evangelicals. What's he doing?
I think Republican-leaning evangelicals is media speak for low-information voters. I mean, you can slice and dice that polling data a lot of ways. I don't know if that really tells me a lot about whether or not people that are, you know, sincere weekly churchgoers really know much about Trump, and Trump is necessarily resonating with them because of a particular religious message. Now, having said that, you know, if you were following closely, at one point in time, a month or two ago, Trump very much made a point of all of a sudden talking very abruptly about the Bible, about, you know, the church he went to in New York growing up, and all these things. It came off as very, very insincere. It spawned this whole Twitter hashtag in terms of Trump Bible verses, because he was asked questions about the Bible that he couldn't answer, and all kinds of other things. So Trump seemed to recognize the importance of resonating with evangelical voters if he did want to eventually win. And so that's why he sort of invented this story of him as this, you know, believing Christian here all of a sudden. I don't think it got very far with evangelical voters, but you know, we've been saying that he's going to, you know, come crashing to earth here, you know, for a long time, and he hasn't done it. So clearly he has some evangelical support.
Is this a state-to-state thing? I mean, Texas, Plano, Texas is, my goodness, I don't think you get any more heartland of American evangelicalism geographically and culturally than that. Maybe Colorado Springs or something like that in the old days. But is this a state-to-state thing, the need to court the evangelical voter?
Yeah, very much so. Part of the reason why Ben Carson was doing so well in Iowa is because, well, one, he's a strong organization there, but because his faith and his pitch to believers is doing very well among evangelicals in the state, who are, in fact, influential within the caucus system, which is, you know, a whole different than just having a regular voting primary. So, you know, that's one thing. Now, are there a bunch of mega churches in New Hampshire? Well, not really. You know, so the pitch to evangelicals is tempered on a state-to-state basis, like you suggest. But obviously, you know, red states, heartland states are going to be more, are going to tilt more toward evangelicals. So, you know, every Republican candidate has to have some sort of pitch ready, I'd say, to evangelicals.
We talked about those who are kind of doing well. You gave us the 2.5. Who's doing very poorly in the GOP field with evangelicals, and why?
Well, that's a good question. I don't think anybody is doing, like, really poorly with evangelicals. I mean, they all have their own sort of religious story to tell, and they all sort of recognize the importance of it, even Trump, as I sort of explained. But, you know, I don't know. I'd be curious to see, you know, Kasich has been surprisingly high in some polls, although he hasn't been rating very high as of late. But Kasich famously expanded Medicaid in his state, which is a very dubious policy prescription. In fact, some studies show that people on Medicaid are actually get worse health outcomes than people who aren't insured at all. And that's how poorly managed the Medicaid system is. But he expanded Medicaid, and his rationale was for it was strictly religious. This is how he tried to sell it to Republican voters. You know, what would Jesus do, basically, as, you know, it was an act of mercy to give these people really, really terrible health insurance. I don't know whether or not that kind of connection between faith and, like, a specific policy is going to turn off voters or not, particularly when the policy in question isn't terribly conservative and is certainly questionable on the merits.
What subjects do GOP candidates need to kind of have on their checklist if they are going to not only win but maintain the few that could maintain real support, the kind of support that will carry through to next November?
Well, I think the two big ones are both religious freedom and pro-life issues. And these are good issues for them because they speak to the evangelical people directly, but they also have, you know, strongly reverberate throughout the broader Republican base. And these issues are also important because in the last couple of years, they've become big legal battlegrounds, and they've also become very nuanced and important debates, such that you really have to bone up on the issues and understand, like, what's going on behind the specific rationale of a case like, you know, the Supreme Court's Hobby Lobby case, in terms of all kinds of layers there and understanding, you know, how the government was and was not trying to compel people to pay for birth control. And, you know, certainly the Planned Parenthood controversy with these undercover investigations has been covered enormously poorly by the press. And, you know, knowing exactly what happened in those videos and knowing exactly what the state laws are in terms of funding for Planned Parenthood and Medicaid and other things like that, really boning up on those issues and speaking with authority on them and be able to make persuasive arguments is going to be key, because the media's done a terrible job of covering those issues. And I think that Republicans are going to be really excited by a candidate that can push back against the prevailing conventional wisdom on these issues, like Carly Fiorina did with Planned Parenthood at the debate, and like Ted Cruz is doing with religious freedom, you know, because if, when they raise these issues, the media is going to come back at them, and they need to have, you know, good answers. And I think a lot of evangelicals and religious voters feel like, you know, the Constitution and the general truth of the situation is on their side, and they're going to be really happy if somebody can go out there and articulate that truth.
Mark Hemingway is our guest. He's a senior writer for the Weekly Standard. When we come back, how do pollsters actually determine who the evangelicals are? I mean, you've got to either self-identify or ask some kind of a question that would help voters identify themselves as evangelicals before you can start measuring what evangelicals think and how they might vote. We'll answer that question with Mark Hemingway of the Weekly Standard right after this.
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran learning. issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
Concordia Publishing House's annual warehouse sale is both online and in store. Take advantage of discounted prices on many of the items you hear promoted on Issues Etc. November 4th through 10th, and join us for a live broadcast from CPH on Thursday afternoon, November the 5th. Concordia Publishing House's warehouse sale online and in store, cph.org, and 3558 South Jefferson in St. Louis. Concordia Publishing House's warehouse sale, November 4th through 10th.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The church's music from the second century. The 6th century. The 12th century. The 16th century. The 21st century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin on this Monday afternoon, October the 19th. We are talking about evangelical voters in the GOP presidential race. Mark Hemingway, senior writer for the Weekly Standard, is our guest. Mark, can you explain this? How do pollsters determine if someone is an evangelical? I mean, there's all sorts of measures here. I'm thinking about pollster George Barna. He measures an evangelical by someone who answers yes to the question, have you had a born-again experience? Now, if you were to ask me that question, while issue by issue, I'm probably classified as an evangelical, I'm not going to be an evangelical by that standard, and I'm not going to self-identify as an evangelical. How do pollsters do it?
That is an excellent question, and I wish more people would ask questions like that involving polls. The reality is that pollsters and their specific methodology are all over the place on issues like this. And very frequently, you see headlines like evangelicals do, support this by X amount of percent. And you have to go into the poll to look at the specific questions they ask to determine that. And those questions can wildly skew things, one way or another, particularly, talking about a poll often is a small sample size that's, plus or minus 5% either way. And then if the question's biased, that can just completely reorder things in a series where you have, you're polling six different candidates, who are all within 20, 30 points of each other. To be perfectly honest, it's really hard to just put much stock, if any, in polls on issues like that. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the better question to ask is what the campaign's, internal polling and what they're doing to figure out in terms of shoring up evangelical support, in terms of endorsements and other things like that. But as for just a blanket poll about this, absurd label of evangelical, well, you have to be, I would take everything that you see in the media purporting to measure quote-unquote evangelical support with a grain of salt.
Given the current Democratic field of candidates, have they essentially, to a person, written off evangelicals as a support of any kind?
With the top two Democratic presidential frontrunners being Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders, I mean, outside of Unitarian Universalist churches or something, or, the clergy of the Episcopal Church, I can't imagine that their broader message is going to appeal to, the average weekly churchgoer in America. They've been skewing Republican for a long time, and I just, particularly with the assaults on religious freedom, particularly with the doubling down on abortion, I just have a really hard time imagining they're going to pick up any significant support from evangelicals, which is interesting because if we go back to 2008, obviously Obama did, and obviously there were left-leaning or centrist evangelical groups that were getting into issues like global warming and environmentalism and other things and like sort of leading the charge on that, and they were taking some centrist and or even right-leaning evangelicals with them on those issues. But I think after 7 years of Obama and sort of unfettered liberalism and the state actually posing a direct threat to churches, I think it's going to be much harder for them to take that kind of evangelical support like they did in 2008.
Well, does that mean then that whatever Republican candidates emerge after the long process, they're going to have to distinguish themselves by getting some of these evangelical issues that we discussed before into the conversation when it comes down to Republican versus Democrat rather than Republican versus Republican?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. And the other thing is even with the of liberal executive right now going right after churches, and everything from tax status on down, taking evangelical support for granted is not something that they can do. Recall that in 2012 there were something like 5 million total less Republican votes cast than there was in 2008. Now 2008 was sort of a big historic election. But a lot of people there's been a lot of grumblings that evangelical voters stayed home because of Mitt Romney and his Mormonism. I don't know if that's ever really been borne out by, compelling research or surveys that show that. But at the same time, it shows that a lot of people stayed home, and certainly evangelicals have had cause for dissatisfaction with the Republican Party, both because they, haven't done enough on the social issues that they care about, and at the same time, the parts of the base that have flirted with more left-leaning issues like environmentalism that Republicans have, sort of stood squarely against. So I think they have to really carefully craft a message that attracts and the evangelicals and compels them to get to the voting booth.
Okay, in the last few minutes here, Mark, I need you to explain something to me. What is going on among congressional Republicans right now, starting with this kind of up-in-the-air speakership job kind of floating around out there?
I can't explain it except to say that, yes, there's a lot of chaos right now. However, having said that, whenever Republicans have, these kinds of issues, the media makes tremendous amount of hay out of it. And I don't know what that's about, whether it's the media's general leftward tilt or what. But the reality is that if you look historically over what, say, the Speaker of the House terms have looked like in the United States, there's been a lot of upheaval. The idea that Tip O'Neill, the Democratic Speaker of the House, who famously held that position for a decade, I mean, that was just a real rarity. Republicans had three different speakers of the House between 1998 and 1999, and George Bush still won the White House the following year. So just because there's chaos now, it does not mean that the entire party is in disarray. And I think that's the thing to keep in mind. I mean, some of the media rhetoric has been overheated. Karen Tumulty, the Washington Post political reporter, who's normally pretty, good and sane, said something like Republicans are on the verge of ceasing to function as a national party because of the speaker chaos. Well, I mean, look, a little bit of chaos in the party is good. It means people are fighting over things. It means that they believe things. It means they have strong ideas about things that should happen. You don't see a lot of that in the Democratic Party. They seem to be marching in lockstep on everything. And as a result, you see two candidates at the top of the ticket now running on an economic platform that, they could have run on 50 years ago in terms of, free health care, free this, $15 minimum wage. I mean, there's no innovation. It's just, straight up redistributionist economic policy. And Republicans, they disagree on things and they're having debates on things and may the best man win.
Okay. Could it possibly be this? And that is, since the party holds a majority in the House, nobody really wants to be the speaker when you are probably not going to gain a majority at the next election. Your number is going to dwindle.
Yeah, being speaker is a really thankless job. I mean, because often your biggest triumphs are the things that you stop from happening behind the scenes that nobody hears about. The times that you barely held the coalition together to do something, So it's often hard to get credit for affirmatively doing something. And the problem is that right now the Republican base is just in this position where they're just fed up with politics as usual. And they, there's a number of issues that they feel that they've been ignored on, immigration being a good example, because that's obviously what's propelled Trump to the top. Republicans haven't wanted to deal with this issue, and the base is finally saying, enough. So it would really help Republicans right now if they could coalesce enough to get, like, one big thing done, throw one big thing in the president's face to at least say, look, we're cohesive on this and we hear your concerns. But, that's a tall order in Washington right now. So I can't imagine Paul Ryan or any of these other guys are basically trying to draft it. Anybody who's looking at me as Speaker of the House right now is going to be doing it just basically for the good of the party, not because they think that they're going to be able to accomplish a lot, at least until, Republican president is elected, if they're lucky, in 2016.
Well, speaking of the one big thing, do you think the Republicans are willing to go to the mat over defunding Planned Parenthood?
I don't think they are, unfortunately. I think that if it were done right, it could make a lot of political sense. But we've seen time and again that Mitch McConnell, in particular, as of late, the Senate Majority Leader, has not really wanted to sort of throw his weight behind that and wanting to do, sort of show votes to placate the pro-life members of the caucus on little marginal issues, speaking to life issues. I think their hope is to get a Republican in there, and once everything's unified, they can do this, much more easily. But I don't know. I mean, I think that the polling shows that certainly there's a lot that could be done, both in terms of defunding Planned Parenthood and introducing, viability limitations and other things that I think that would actually poll very well and be very hard for the liberals to fight back against it. But again, this is another issue where liberals are just an absolute lockstep. I mean, it's amazing the coordination that goes on between people in the media, the PR firms that are, staffed with ex-Obama people that represent Planned Parenthood, and, they just all are on exactly the same page at all times, and they just, you know, have stayed completely on message, and they're a very difficult political organization to go up against it, and as a result.
Mark Hemingway is a senior writer for the Weekly Standard. You can read his columns at our website, issuezetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Mark, thanks for being our guest.
Thanks for having me again.
When we come back, Pastor Tom Baker joins us of Law and Gospel. We'll be teaching a Sunday school lesson today, the Passover, in Exodus 11 and 12. Do you have a hard time finding Christian greeting cards and gifts that aren't either sappy or theologically suspect? Ad Crucem offers the perfect combination of art and the truth of the Scriptures with beautiful and reverent greeting cards and gifts. Deliver the true comfort of the gospel, Christ crucified for sinners, to family and friends with Ad Crucem. ADCRUCEM.com. Confessing the faith through art and word. AdCrucem.com.
LCMS Rural and Small Town Mission exists to support and encourage congregations in rural and small town settings. In partnership with LCMS districts, RSTM is uniquely positioned to make a major impact in revitalization support, community engagement and outreach training, congregational partnership development, and worker support through providing and developing resources geared specifically to rural and small town congregations. Check us out at lcms.org/RSTM or give us a call at our office. We're here to help.
Holy Cross Lutheran Church, Moline, Illinois, invites you to join us in receiving the Lord's gifts in word and sacrament. Sunday services are at 8:15 and 10:45 a.m., with Bible class and Sunday school at 9:30 a.m. We are located in the Quad Cities at 4107 21st Avenue, Moline, Illinois. Welcome in the name of our Lord.
Hollywood's attitude toward Christianity, the Bible's influence on the U.S. Constitution, the decline of biblical preaching, the connection between biblical illiteracy and Western morality. You'll find these essays and more in the new book, The Word They Still Shall Let Remain, The Place of the Holy Scriptures in the Faith and Life of Confessional Lutherans. Check it out at shop.logia.org. The Word They Still Shall Let Remain, shop.logia.org.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Steadfast Lutherans, people who believe that traditional Lutheran preaching, liturgy, and hymnody continue to deliver Christ crucified for sinners today. The Reformation attempted to return the Church's focus on what we do for God back to a focus on what God does for us, that Christ died for our sins in accordance with the Scriptures. Some things never change. The gospel is still under attack from inside and outside the church. To see how Lutheran doctrine and practice preserve the gospel, visit steadfastlutherans.org.
Lutheran Talk.
In Lutheranism, I come as a guilty sinner in need of hearing the forgiving words of Christ every single time I gather. Every single time.
Lutheran Music. The new Lutheran Public Radio app. Download for iPhone, Android, Windows Phone, and Kindle at issuesetc.org.